It's Wednesday. It's a reasonably nice day, and I'm just harnessing Jackie out, my guide dog, who's wagging her tail violently because she's ready to get on her way. We're going today to meet Di and David Ginger. This is for Draycott Diaries, recorded by me, Tiggy. And hopefully they're going to be able to give us more in-depth insight into particularly the lambing season, which is just starting there now. It makes me laugh, actually, because not that long ago, I went over as a volunteer for the morning to try and help with the farm. And I think I completely changed the biodiversity of the farm in that morning. And though Di and David were incredibly generous and waved me on their way, I think they were very pleased to see the back of me. So hopefully I'll get a warm welcome. So let's get on our way. We've walked over here. Gosh, can I just leave my boots here,
yes,
Di?
Yes, do.
Is that all right?
Yes. Come on in and we'll bring your boots in the wall.
Oh,
and then they'll be warm for when you go.
I'll bring down. Jackie, come on. Here come Jack. Jackie, come. Can I just say, to those who are not lucky enough to be where I am right now, we are in the most beautiful farmhouse, and Di and David have lit a gorgeous roaring fire, and I've just walked over from Draycott and it took me about half an hour. I've many times met up with you guys and I'd like to know, I think, but at the beginning, how did you both meet? And it remind me, Di, is it your family that you've inherited the farm from?
Yes, my parents actually lived, came to Manor Farm opposite the church. And they purchased it in 1945 and farmed all those years until 1988.
Is that beautiful?
Yes, the big house.
With the lovely yew trees.
That's right.
Oh,
I was born really? Literally born there.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And my grandfather, in fact, bought this property as well. And so my father's...
And this property is the farm, it's at the foot, isn't it, of the Mendip Hills?
Yes,
I mean,
is.
What area would we call this?
Well, just at the base of the Mendip Hills, really.
Yeah, it's in a fabulous...
And it's in a lovely little valley just here.
Yeah.
It's very special. And my grandfather bought it and then sold it to my father's cousin, who was his cheesemaker.
Oh!
So, and it's just started off as just 12 acres, and he used to milk just 10 cows and grow lots of strawberries.
Okay, so it was cows in those days. And obviously it had been a farm for generations.
It wasn't a sheep farm then.
Oh, I see. So
and he actually grew strawberries, and apparently the field at the back of the house was meant to be the warmest field in the whole of the Cheddar Valley.
Oh, okay. Because I think that's one thing that I want to just make note of, actually, is that Draycott and Rodney Stoke, the parish of, we live in what they call the strawberry capital of the world, don't they? Mm. I mean, in generations past,
yes,
this was the major strawberry growing area.
Well, my parents used to grow strawberries.
Did they?
In the front garden opposite the church. And in fact, my mother supplied strawberries to the Queen.
Did she?
So, yes, they used to grow some very nice strawberries.
And how did she deliver them? Did she go up on a bicycle?
They went by train.
Oh, okay. Was this on the strawberry line?
Yes.
As it was?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because
yes.
There used to be, before my time, a steam train, didn't there?
That's
used to run through
as children, we always waved to the train as it went by. It was always exciting.
Let's go to the nice romantic bit. I want to know how you met the gorgeous David.
Well, my parents used to, because it was such a big house, they used to provide farm holidays for anybody from London, the higher, you know, high-flying London executives used to come down with their families. And Mum used to cook breakfast, dinner, tea. She was a wonderful cook. And I ended up often as a little waitress. I used to love meeting the people. And I think it was 9 when I first remember David coming to the farm.
And how old would David have been then?
He's 7 years older than me.
Oh, okay. An older man, David.
So, yes. And David obviously liked farming. End of story. And I can remember really remembering when he came when I was about 16. And I saw this dark, tall, dark, handsome man, and we just immediately fell in love.
Oh! And
there we are.
Did you, and David, is that the story you remember?
Well, that's right, yes. I'm a first generation farmer. I'm very unlike Di, whose family have been farming for years. Mm. As Di was saying, I was brought up in London, but I always wanted a farm.
Okay.
I went to a quite a posh public school in the City of London.
Okay.
My parents wanted me to be a sort of a careers person, especially my mother. She wanted, you know, they were very high flying, my parents, and had both had good jobs, and they wanted me to go to university and either be a captain in the army or a pilot or a, you know, something like that. Have a proper career. But I always wanted a farm. And, of course, when we came down to Rodney Stoke and stayed at Di's parents' farmhouse in the summer.
Were you just coming down as a family for holidays?
Family for a holiday.
Oh, okay.
And that was
so it's like Airbnb of its time.
Yes, that was my ideal holiday, of course, being a farmer. And eventually, I don't know, we probably came for a couple of years, maybe 2 or 3 years, summers, 2 or 3 summers, I expect. And then... as I say, I always wanted a farm. I got in touch with Di's father and said, could I come down on my own? Because my parents weren't coming during the holidays, and spend time on the farm with him. And that's how it all started, really.
And did you already then have the hearts for Di? There we go. That went in a bit 2019.
I don't know. Possibly, yes. That's a long time ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I'm a complete novice on this, I'd love to just kind of get a sense of a timeline, using sort of teletalk, of the sheep year. I mean, of your year. I mean, clearly, as you said, come and, if you want to come and talk, just come now, because clearly you're going to be really, really busy.
That's
once
right,
you sell,
yes.
I mean. So that's presumably is your busiest time of the year. So taking it through the... Take it from the beginning to the end of the year. Obviously, now is... you know, we've gone to New Year and it's the lead up to lambing. Then lambing will be over when?
At the end of April.
Okay. And then what is the kind of the schedule for the rest of the year on
the rest
on
of the
farm?
Year we would be, obviously all the sheep will be out in the fields, and we have to then get ready for shearing, and then marketing the lambs. July onwards, probably.
So the money that you're making is on the sale of however many lambs you have each year.
Yes.
So you've got a pretty good idea, have you, in advance, because you can scan the sheep.
Yes, they're all scanned, so we know exactly how many lambs we're having, but we never know what price we're going to get.
Oh, okay. That.
And we it is a closed flock, so we've been breeding our own ewes for 45 years, and that's very rewarding.
And Di, again, forgive me for my lack of knowledge of this. If it is a closed flock, how are you getting the new blood into the...
We do buy in certified rams.
Okay.
Yes.
So is there still... I mean, do you still go to markets and do a lot of sort of leaning on fences and hard bargaining?
No. There we go.
That's a shame, because I do have a vision of you doing that, Di.
No.
Leaning on your crook with David, the two of you going, whoa, I'm not going to drop any lower.
It's very much a joint effort when we go to buy new rams, because I might give Dave a bit of an elbow and then he'll look at me, and between us, we usually hopefully make a good decision.
Okay. Because they always seem to me when I go to sheep fairs, and I haven't been for very many, I have to confess, but it's like a foreign language, because there's lots of people shouting and you know, and you're all having to sort of nod and wink. I mean, how does that work? So if you see a ram, You obviously get a previewing.
Well, we have a preview. We go and look at everything and then mark our catalogue of the ones we like the look of.
Okay.
And we stick pretty well to that. So if we want one, we're going to probably buy it.
And do you bargain for it? I mean, like in an auction?
Well, we have it's bids. It's all done by bids.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And during the lambing period, and you were talking about early, well, the first week of March, where it really all kicks off, for you and David, is it a 24-hour...
Well, we work together. What usually happens a day in the life of the lambing shed, as it were, I get up first thing in the morning. Which
what
is
time?
Only, well, 5 o'clock.
Okay.
And I go out and see if anything's lambed. Because the problem is, if anything lambs during the night, the lambs can get mixed up.
Have you bought them all into an area?
We've got them all in an area, into reasonable sort of numbers, probably 20 or 30 in a pen,
okay.
Big pen. But if you get two or three lambing in that same pen during the night when you're not there, they can tend to take to the wrong lambs, to other used lambs.
Yeah.
Because they're all geared up to lamb and the hormones are going and whatnot, and they think if another one lambs, or that's my lamb, I'll take it.
Oh.
And if you subsequently pen that ewe up with two lambs which aren't hers, which she thinks they are,
right,
she will reject them.
Okay.
After an hour or two, and she twigs that she says, well, they're not mine, and that's it, off you go. And then you're in trouble then, because you've got to find out who's lamb belongs to which ewe. So that's why people tend to stay up for the lambing, to know, because as soon as they lamb, they can see that lamb has the two lambs, and they put it in an individual pen on its own.
Okay.
So it bonds with those two lambs, and they're her two lambs. But if you let them lamb in a bigger area, when there's several ewes that could be lambing at the same time, could be, you can get it mixed up with the lambs, a good lamb.
And the other question I have was that quite a few sheep have twins, don't they, and some have triplets, something. Is that, because I would have always thought as a layperson that, wow, that's great, that's got to be more money because you're having extra lambs for a sheep. But does it have a counter effect in the way that those lambs may be slightly weaker?
There's nothing better than having two lambs.
Okay.
They have three. 9 times out of 10, they cannot support three lambs. So I'm the person that ends up with quite a few lambs on the bottle. And that can be quite a big job.
Okay. So who deals with that, Linda? Do you bring them in, or do you have...
Well, we just take the one lamb, the smallest lamb, off the mother and match the other two and rear them artificially.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I remember once you said to me, which I thought sounded lovely, don't you put them in little woolly jackets or something?
Oh, yes. If they're cold, I make these little jackets.
You make them yourself?
Old jumpers, yeah.
So are you knitting in front of the fire, lamb jackets?
No. Any fleece jackets that have gone past their sell-by date.
Okay.
I then cut them up and...
So should we be bringing you our old fleeces?
Well, maybe. And funnily enough, I've got my sewing machine in the dining room. That's what I've been doing this last couple of days.
I remember you once, because you and I had a conversation about it, because I'm quite interested in all of that. And I said to you, do you think, Di, that you are a white witch? And you did cackle like that, which made it even more worrying. But you do seem to be a woman that certainly has, gosh, it's difficult to identify, but certain powers. I mean, in the years gone by, people arrived at your door with ailments and you've got on a pot of newts and that sort of stuff going in the kitchen.
I think I have got healing hands.
Oh.
I think the lambs... there's something there that I've just got a natural flair, maybe.
But you have to be, don't you? To be a good shepherd, that's the main thing, to be caring person.
I'm sure.
Really feel what the sheep are feeling and look after them. Don't say, well, I'll do that later. You've got to you've got to see a problem and act and work on it straight away. Which Di is brilliant at, because she would be in the, if there were problems in the lambing shed, I wouldn't see her perhaps all night, you know. She'd be about there, happy as a sandboy, looking after the sheep, and eventually come in. I said, where have you all been in the lambing shed, you know, this, that, yeah. But she wouldn't come in until everything was just so. She was happy.
Yeah. The sheep come first.
Definitely.
Well, I do also remember, Dad, the other enlightening thing of that morning of destruction was that the vets, they were all having a little giggle in the corner and pointing at you, which I thought was rather rude until I found out what it was. And they were like, I said, why are you laughing? Poor Di, she's over there working hard. And they said, no, we're not laughing at her. We're laughing with her. And I said, why? And they said, well, haven't you seen her hair? And you had sort of very crispy sort of fringe, and they were calling you placenta hair.
Yes, that's right.
And during lambing, you walk around with quite crispy hair because you've always got your head, haven't you, against the body of the sheep.
Yeah.
Because you're doing something with the poor thing. But, and might I say so now, you do have incredibly good hair, don't you? Do you think there is a secret here?
I think the secret is enjoy what you do.
Tell me a little bit about your dogs at the moment. How many have you got?
Just got the one at the moment.
Oh, just the one. You did have two.
Yeah, we did. Sadly, Meg died with old age.
Oh, was that a long time ago?
That was last. Was it last?
2 years.
I think it's 2 years ago.
Oh. Yeah, she was a great love of yours. Mm. Wasn't she? She was a good dog.
Not as good as this one.
Oh, really? This one's coming.
This is the best we've ever had. She's beautiful.
Is she? And her name is
No Malice. Her name is Lass. And funny enough, we bought her at an auction. We went to buy a dog. 45 dogs came in, and there was nothing that I clicked with. And then this little dog came in, and I said to Dave, don't stop bidding. She's the one I want. And he didn't stop bidding, and we bought her.
Oh.
And she is an absolute treasure, isn't she?
She most definitely is, yeah. She's the best natured collie we've ever had, I think.
Is she? Mm-hmm. Is she? And she, did you train her yourself? Or?
Yes, we had a little bit of help. And funny enough, the person that bred her was a Mr. Scadden.
Oh, and you're just Scadden's farm. Yes, because you live in Scadden's farm, don't you? Here? Yeah. And was there a link?
Well, funny enough, every time I go back to the sales, not that I'm going to necessarily buy another dog, I always see Mr. Scadden, and he always remembers, you know, marvellous sheep handler, sheepdog handler.
What makes Floss a good sheepdog?
Floss? Lass.
Lass?
Lass.
Floss. Sorry, I don't know where that came from.
Lass. What makes her a good sheepdog? I'll tell you what, she loves the sheep. There is no nasty with her. She's maybe not quite as forceful as perhaps some people want something a little bit stronger. But she's so kind with the sheep, and they respect each other. And that's actually really important.
And that kind of connection between shepherd and dog, I'm assuming it would make the job almost impossible, nigh impossible, if you didn't have a good sheepdog, would it?
Yeah.
So
she's always wants to know where we are. She's never too far away, is she?
No,
Dave?
She's not.
She lives outside, doesn't she?
She does, yes.
It must make you laugh when people like myself come in, you know, with our dogs and wrap them up in front of the farm. But that's how they...
Well, actually, she's had the last fortnight actually living in the house.
Has she?
Had her teeth scaled.
Okay.
And we just wanted to make sure she was fine after the anaesthetic. And so actually tonight will be her first night outside.
Oh. So, how do you think she's going to take to that?
Well, I think she still likes it outside.
Really?
No, she prefers it outside.
Does she?
Yes.
Definitely, yeah.
Now, just coming back to the sheep a second. You were talking about a good sheep. You know, for someone like myself who doesn't know about one sheep being different from another, define, David, I'll throw this one to you. What do you think makes a good sheep?
Well, it depends what sort of sheep you want, really. There are people who breed them for breeding purposes. Breeding a ewe with hybrid vigour would have a lot of lambs and plenty of milk, and breed replacement sheep for lowland farmers to carry on and breed fat lambs. And we our sheep are for fat lamb production.
Okay.
We sell all, we do keep a proportion of the ewe lambs for our own use to breed from. So we keep sort of probably 70 ewe lambs back every year to put back into our flock, which is why we were talking about a closed flock. So we don't buy any ewes. They've all been bred on the farm, and we're breeding or selecting ewe lambs that we want for a nice fat lamb, a proper fat lamb, plenty of meat, and which is our main source of income, the sale of the fat lambs. And when the fat lambs go to market, people want to buy our lambs. There's a lot of difference in fat lambs, and we hopefully tend to be always above average. Our fat lambs would always be the top end of the market when we take them to market, simply because we put a lot of thought into the breeding of our ewes, and we go off and buy perhaps two or three rams a year, and always buy probably better rams than some other people would buy.
Can I ask you two questions in a quite succinct way? Is that if I said to you, in all the time that you've been together and you've been sheep farming, this relates to farming, obviously there'd be nothing, what would be categorised for you as a low moment, and what would be categorised as a really great moment? Can you think of a time where you thought
this is... The low moment would have been at Foot and Mouth.
Yeah.
We were lambing ewes in 6 inches of water in a field. Very difficult.
But will you tell us a little bit more about that when you say, what was it? So, first of all, about the Foot and Mouth, why in this wet field then, Di?
Because we couldn't move them, we weren't allowed to.
I see. So they just had to be kept in this one area.
Yeah, you couldn't move them.
And they were...
weren't allowed to.
So they were trying to lamb in soaking wet conditions.
And then we, in the end, I think we were one of the first in Somerset to get permission to move them back to the farm. And they were literally lambing as they were going up the tailboard of the lorry. It was awful. I had one student, and she said, "What can I do?" I said, "Just follow me and keep me smiling." And that night... bless her, she came in and cooked the supper, found a bottle of wine in the cupboard and opened it. And I was not a happy girl that day.
This was one particular day?
Yes.
Because it was obviously over a certain amount of time. And it was to do with moving them, was it?
Yes. No, you couldn't move them.
2001, wasn't it? Yeah, I think. Foot and Mouth, yeah.
But the bit I'm trying to get to is why were they lambing actually? You were saying they were lambing as you were going along.
Well, because they were in labour.
Oh, I see.
You know?
It was lambing time, and everything was stopped. You couldn't move any animals at all anywhere.
Okay.
So if they were in that field 5 miles away, they had to stay there.
Okay.
And until... the powers that be, DAFRA, the animal health people, said, well, the Foot and Mouth died down, they gave you a license, special license, to bring them home if there was a...
I virtually spent a whole day on the phone to DAFRA the day before. Many tears were shed that day, and eventually I did get a license.
How did you lose a lot of sheep?
We lost some lambs, yes.
So it's just really for you is the desperation of seeing the very things that you'd love and nurtured.
Yes.
In real distress.
Yeah.
Giving birth.
Yeah.
In a horrendous situation.
Horrendous it was.
Oh, God, I cannot say.
We had one flock at Westbury, on Westbury Moor, and one flock down at Rodney Stoke Moor. Yeah, it's very difficult times.
Well, 2019... Where are we now? So tell me about Hi. I'm sure there's hopefully been many.
Ooh.
I don't know. We've just recently scanned our inland views, haven't we?
Yes.
Which all very well. And as we said before, we breed all our own replacements. And one thing I didn't mention about breeding your replacements, they know the farm. The sheep are brilliant.
Oh, do they?
We've got land in probably three places, and so we have to move the sheep about quite a bit, sort of three blocks of land. And one of the things, we bring them up through the village. We've got down on the levels, down on the moor during the summer. Mm. We have to bring them up in the winter because it gets so wet. We bring them up, reasonably frequently when they've got to be shorn or for various reasons. And basically, Di and I, we could just open the gate.
They know where they're going.
And they would. I know we have to be there with them because of the traffic and other. But if there wasn't any traffic, they would just come straight up from Rodney Stoke Moor, which is what, probably 3 miles.
Yeah.
All the way up through Rodney Stoke, cross the main road, and into the farm.
Really?
Yeah, because they're virtually. You've heard of probably what hill sheep, where they have on the hills with no fences.
Yeah.
The sheep know their areas.
Yeah.
Well, this is a similar thing. Our sheep know all their fields and where they've got to go. Yeah.
But that must be just a nice sense of
that's too. Oh, it's lovely. Quite a nice feeling.
Because they want to come home. That's where they want
they
to
know.
Go. How lovely.
And this year, when we have them scanned, we had 181%. It's the highest scanning result we've ever had in our lives.
Sorry.
So that's high.
Now, Di, as well as bringing you biscuits, I bought you this book, and it's by James Rebanks. And I'm listening, obviously I don't read print for obvious reasons, but I'm listening to it at the moment on audiobooks. Audiobooks have changed my life, it's wonderful. And it's called The Shepherd's Life. And it's about, actually, he, as well as being a sheep farmer, which is, of course, why I bought it, with you in mind, may, as I said, my prologue, maybe Coles to Newcastle. But I think there is a kind of interesting bit in it, because he wasn't interested in education at all, anything like that. He just wanted to be a sheep farmer. But he kind of found out by default, really, that actually he was quite a bright boy, and he ended up going to Oxford. Mm-hmm. And I think he went first to Oxford, but he still is a sheep farmer. You know, he will never, ever be anything else but a sheep farmer. So I got this for you, and just as a very small way of thanks, I mean, obviously you'll both read it.
Mm, yes, definitely.
That's very kind.
When you're wrestling, whatever it is, you're... There we go.
That's very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, listen, thank you both for making me and Jackie feel so welcome this afternoon, and for sharing your stories, and for being part of Draycott Diaries. You've been listening to Draycott Diaries, recorded by me, Tiggy Trethowan, edited by Rob Elliott, and the music was composed by Hugh Trethowan.